That's the problem with men. All right, I'm Greg Gutfeld along with Judge Jeanine Pirro, Jessica Tarlov, Jesse Waters, and security has to make sure she's not stolen by hawks. Dana Perino, The Five. Donald Trump and Joe Biden are battling over who gets the nuke codes, but the two candidates are already going nuclear on one another. President Biden launching this preemptive strike.
What, in your view, constitutes the primary threat to freedom and democracy at home?
Donald Trump. Seriously. Donald Trump uses phrases like, you're going to eviscerate the Constitution, he's going to be a dictator on day one. I can't think of any other time in my lifetime, in history has occurred, that you've had somebody who's had this kind of attitude.
Oh, man. Kamala is backing up Joe's fear flex.
Had it or hit it, Donald Trump totally had it.
Had it.
Had it over and over and over again. There's so much at stake in this election.
I don't think it's hyperbolic to say this genuinely could be the last Democratic election we ever have.
You're right.
Did you just ask Kamala if she'd sleep with Trump?
I think so. I heard that.
Okay. Had it or hit it? Okay. But Trump is not letting those attacks slide. The former president out in Georgia, where he's got a hero's welcome at Chick-fil-A in Atlanta and ordered 30 milkshakes for customers who apparently are not lactose intolerant like me. He unleashed the whole arsenal on the Biden regime.
We are a nation in decline. Biden is the worst president in the history of our country. He's corrupt and he's incompetent. He can't put two sentences together. And I think we're going to have a tremendous victory. I predict that November 5th will go down as the most important day in the history of our country. He's done more damage than the 10 worst presidents in the history of our country. There has never been anybody that's damaged our country like crooked Joe Biden.
Had it or hit it. Apparently, Donald Trump is no Willie Brown, Dana. Do you think they don't think it's hyperbolic to say this genuinely could be the last Democratic election we ever have? Maybe it's me because I was an English major, but isn't that the definition of hyperbolic?
I think you're right. Actually, when you know what? The next time we play our D block game.
Yeah.
Coming up, folks, that's a deep tease. I will have you as my partner. Okay, so they have been talking about protecting democracy for a long time, right? And they've been saying all of this about Donald Trump. And I'm assuming that they did that, one, because they believe it, and also because it probably polls well for them, for their base, which they still need to lock up. But the problem is, right now, they've squeezed all the juice out of that lemon, and President Trump and Donald Trump and Joe Biden are tied on who will protect democracy. So I don't know how much more they're going to be able to do on that one. The other point is you have this really weird dynamic with Biden where in the days leading up to the State of the Union, there were leaks from his administration that he was going to issue some executive orders on immigration in order to get the border under control. Then the night before the State of the Union, they said, actually, no.
Yeah.
He's not doing that. And it's because the Republicans didn't pass the bill. And what did we find then 4 weeks later? Now we are back to he is likely, possibly, maybe going to do this executive order because he realizes how bad it is. And that's how you get to a 70% disapproval on the border. And my last point is, it's the economy, stupid. And when you have an inflation report like the one you had this morning, you will get to inflation, economy. Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago on the cost of your groceries, the cars, the gas, all of that? That's what this election is going to come down to.
I think you really hit it. Jesse, I'd love to go to some sound on tape.
Please.
And then I will come to you after that. Let's roll that, Gladys.
We're examining whether or not I have that power. There's no guarantee that I have that power all by myself without legislation. And some are suggesting I should just go ahead and try it. And if I get shut down by the court, I get shut down by the court. But we're trying to work through that right now.
Jesse, this is an amazing comparison between a leader and a non-leader. When China got that virus out, you didn't hear Trump go, let's talk about shutting down the border. He actually acts. This guy goes, let's have a conversation. Let's talk about it. And then nothing happens, and then he returns to it. This guy can't act.
Well, he can act when he wants to. Yeah. He acted on bailing out students for their loans, but now he's, I think he's just buying time because he's been debating in his head what he's been doing about this. This is just to kind of entice people to get them all excited about it. But those cameras at Univision made Joe look old. Mm. Those were bad cameras. I would never do another Univision again. And he was squinting. I mean, he looks 100 years old in that shot. That was not a
he's
good
look.
He's
not a good 80.
No, he's that's an old 80.
Yes. Yes.
They keep saying he's going to end democracy. And I hang around with a lot of liberals. My family's liberals. Even my mother doesn't think he's going to end democracy. This talking point only exists on MSNBC. Mm-hmm. No one ever even comes up to Johnny on the streets and says Trump's a dictator or is going to end democracy. I've never heard this anywhere except on cable news. It's not sinking in. And if anybody's a threat to democracy, we can play that game. It's Joe Biden. I mean, his buddies at the CIA and FBI interfered in the last election. They're still blocking investigations into the Biden crimes. So I don't like playing that game. I don't think that game is effective. I agree with Dana. This is about the economy. Stupid. The Chick-fil-A event. This was an event to behold. Now, everything you've heard about Donald Trump in the press is that he's like this dangerous racist. He waltzes in there, orders food, and about a dozen African-American women flock to him and take selfies. African-American women, the most loyal voting bloc of the Democratic Party. He has them giggling. He has them lining up. He says, Mom, I'm famous now. It's all love in the Chick-fil-A. Now, if he can just do this, I would run the Chick-fil-A campaign.
That's a great idea.
I would just go to as many restaurants, grocery stores, malls as I could.
Absolutely.
And just have regular Americans swarm him, embrace him, and love him. And that is what is going to win him the election.
Like Tiffany.
You know,
who's Tiffany?
Joe wouldn't do that because he's chicken.
Because he's chicken.
Yes, you are what you eat. Hey, Judge. So I think the VP claimed that she met with 150 world leaders and they all expressed concern about this. Do you buy that? Do you buy what she's selling?
No, never, never have, never will. No, I don't even give it a lot of thought. Look, the whole idea, and I just want to continue with that theme for a minute, of Donald Trump being a threat to democracy. I mean, who is it that, as Jesse said, weaponized the DOJ, the CIA, the FBI? You know, they've impeached him. They've indicted him. But they're the ones who were taking him off the ballot. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's the Democrats who made up that political dossier that they took to a corrupt FISA court by a corrupt attorney general and United States attorney to try to spy on him. They were spying on a candidate for president of the United States. This is done in third world countries. And by the way, I will segue very smoothly into the fact that Joe Biden has made us a third world country. Never in the history of this country have I seen people, especially in New York City, living the way they're living now, where the illegals are coming here. We're greeting them on buses. We're flying them in. They give us this false, you know, I'm being persecuted. Give me asylum. We shake their hand. We give them a goodie bag. They come in. They take a goodie bag and they steal everything they can from CVS. They beat up the employees at Target and at Macy's. Then they assault the police, resist arrest. There's a trail of destruction, economic devastation. And by the way, I don't think this issue got enough attention. Do you know that murders are down in Venezuela? The lowest they've been in 20 years. So maybe Donald Trump isn't so wrong about people emptying out prisons because our crimes are going up and theirs are going down. And everything about what Joe Biden has done is defying the American law, whether it is entry to this country, staying here. And obviously, we've got to not only make sure that they are bailed whenever they're arrested, but we've got to deport them.
Mm-hmm. You know, Jessica, in the green room, you said that if Trump wins, it could be the end of all time and space. And what's worse, it will hurt women and minorities more.
I did say that.
Yes, you did.
It's extreme pregnancy fog, I guess, as I near the end of the line. That was a very rich discussion. I'm going to try to address as many of the points as I possibly can.
Just get one.
Commercial break in about 30 seconds.
No. Commercial break is when I am done with this. So the threat to democracy point is not working. And all of the good pollsters have made that point very clear to the Biden administration, that actually the messaging that works is about the mundane stuff that people want to hear about, lowering prescription drug prices and things like the debt and the deficit and preserving Medicare and Social Security. Those are all encompassed in the economy, right? Like how you're doing and how your family's going to survive looking ahead to the future. So that point is definitely out there. But to say that Joe Biden is the threat to democracy, considering what Donald Trump and his band of lawyers tried to pull off in 2020, is complete insanity. I mean, he dispatched lawyers all over the country to overturn a free and fair election. A lot of them have pled out to doing this. A lot of them are still to face trial. And he's doing his darndest to make sure that he doesn't have to show up in any of these courtrooms because he's definitely afraid of what's going to happen there. And as many of these January 6th
participants... He's not participant, afraid of anything.
Oh, big man, not afraid, whatever.
I know him.
Okay, I'm sure you do know him, and I don't know him, but I don't think that that man who doesn't want to even sleep in a hotel bed wants to go to jail. So don't refute what happened. We know about Sidney Powell. We know about John Eastman, who just got disbarred. Rudy Giuliani, who's obviously not in very good position, how the mighty have fallen. But the point of this interview and doing it with Univision was about Latino support, right? And making sure that he shores that up. And he's down. He was up 29 points with Latinos the first year in office, and that edge is down to 9 points. And that's due to the issues of inflation and crime. He's doing better on them, but he's obviously got ground to make up. And it's interesting that this came out yesterday and we had the ruling taking us back to 1864 in Arizona about abortion, because Latino votes in Nevada and Arizona are what are going to be really crucial there. 57% of Hispanics say abortion should be legal in all or most cases. And Donald Trump is out there defending his stance of you leave it to the states. He did say today, I won't support a federal abortion ban. He has said before that he supports a 15 or 16 week ban. So I don't know if he's going to be consistent with that. But the Democrats are going to make that a centerpiece of this conversation, as they should.
Yeah.
That's it.
Joe did not look good there.
No, he looked bad.
I'm glad that's what you took from what I said.
No, I was just, yeah.
Well, I know you zoned out.
I did.
I can tell when it's happening.
Thinking about what I was going to eat.
Yeah.
Up next, an NPR editor dropping bombs on the woke broadcaster's anti-Trump bias.
Here's to getting better with it.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
We've always assumed that NPR is just a taxpayer-funded group therapy for Donald Trump-hating, soy milk-sipping, EV-driving, CRT-loving, intersectional blue-haired libs. But now a senior business editor at the company just confirmed it. It's all laid out in a new piece in the Free Press titled, I've been at NPR for 25 years. Here's how we lost America's trust. He's blowing the lid off its left-wing bias, exposing how Network ignored the Hunter Biden laptop and how Adam Schiff became their assignment editor.
You're trying to damage his presidency, to even find anything we could to harm him. And I think what we latched on to was Russia collusion. It was just rumors, and a lot of it based on pretty shoddy documents or evidence. We really latched on to Adam Schiff. He was like our muse to the Trump collusion story. And then the Mueller report came out, and no collusion. And, you know, I think we sort of learned the story kind of disappeared.
He also said NPR is basically the DNC in disguise.
I got so frustrated with what I saw was the sort of the lack of different perspectives in our coverage. What I found was 87 registered Democrats on our editorial staff, zero Republicans. Something's gone wrong here where, you know, if we're really thinking about diversity and our coverage, the response was, it wasn't like it wasn't like, wow, it wasn't like we're going to change this or try and address this somehow. It was just more like, wow, that's weird.
So, Greg, this was, we didn't see this coming, but, I mean, brave man came out. He still works at NPR. Yeah.
Good for him, I say. I mean, we knew this was true, but we were mocked when we would bring this up. But, I mean, 87 Democrats and zero Republicans as NPR editors. That says everything. 87-0. That's like the score when I smoked Stevie Wonder in pickleball. The media really needs DEI. But it's of ideas and perspectives, which is the true test of diversity. I mean, how insulting is it if they're hiring you for being black as long as you're their kind of black, right? You have to think this a certain way. The numbers of NPR viewership are way down. I mean, they're basically like a fraction of what they used to be. And I think they're getting slaughtered for this reason, but also because podcasting is so full of independent thinkers who appreciate open topics. And the people in these podcasts, whether it's Rogan or Tim Dillon or whoever you like, they learn on the spot. They're willing to say when they're wrong. NPR is still in the model of manicured assumptions. You know, they mow the lawn of interesting ideas. So when you turn it on, you won't get pricked by a little blade of grass. But this was all encouraged because the greater mission was defeating Hitler 2.0. If you don't break every rule and every professional guideline to defeat Hitler, i.e. Trump, then the history, which is written by the losers, not the winners, as we're told, you will not be looked on fondly. You will be seen as a collaborator or a coward. And that's all I have to say.
He mentioned how NPR was like the DNC because he said after Trump was elected, Dana, they spent all of their time just trying to damage Trump politically.
I am fascinated by this story. I'm grateful to the Free Press. I'm a happy subscriber. They are constantly driving news, and they have this place where Yuri Berliner, who had tried to do the right thing internally inside the company to say, guys, I think we have a problem here. And he took it to the bosses. They had meetings scheduled, and all of a sudden they get taken off the books. Like, they never actually wanted to meet with him. And then when he does this interview with the Free Press on the podcast and posts his piece, the first instinct that NPR has is to go after him. And one of the things that Alfonso said, let's see, Fernando Alfonso is a senior supervising editor for Digital News. He's furious because he says, as a person of color who has often worked in newsrooms with little to no people who look like me, the efforts NPR has made to diversify its workforce are... That's not his point. He's talking about diversity of thought. And if you want to appeal to a mass audience, you're not going to get there. Podcasting, absolutely. There didn't used to be options of things to talk about. And so they didn't keep up with the times. I've loved shows like Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Car Talk was a great show. I love David Greene, Don Gagne. I had a lot of time. But in the mornings, I've spent a lot of time at the White House listening to NPR, and I would get so mad at 5 a.m. They would make my head explode. And then about 4 months later, after the administration ended, my friend said, you realize you don't have to listen to that anymore, right? But I still, as a habit, I'd like to find out what they're doing. And I'm glad that he actually said it, because I thought I was the one going crazy, but turns out I'm actually perfectly sane.
No, you're perfectly sane, Dana. And now let's go to you, Jessica. Do you believe, as I do, that what this guy said about NPR is probably true for most liberal news organizations, CNN, MSNBC, The New York Times?
Yes, and we have discussed that before. I think a cable news network is also a little bit different from a taxpayer-funded outlet, and that's really what the issue is here. And I lived in London for a long time, and these accusations are thrown around about the BBC as well, and you can even look at their
also
coverage.
True.
Especially, I mean, you know, it's a more recent example, obviously, than when I lived there, but their coverage of the Israel-Hamas war is a glaring example of that, and it got over to the New York Times. I mean, that was one of the most upsetting and horrifying internal debates about whether Hamas used sexual violence as a tool on October 7th, as if these women had their groins pulverized out of thin air or their breasts cut off. You know, obviously that's what they were using sexual violence for. My question that I would throw back to Berliner, though, about this is, so the Conservative Party, and I think whether you are a rhino or a Trump lover in all of this, everyone can acknowledge that it changed after 2016, that Trump has had this massive effect on the kind of ideology of the Republican Party. We don't hear about, you know, limited government and cutting taxes as much as we hear about, let's say, social justice issues, or I shouldn't say social justice, kind of fighting the woke enemy issues, et cetera. Now, if you have someone, like we could take John Eastman, for instance, I already brought him up in the A block, who wants to write something for NPR or to be a guest on there. And he's going to come on and he's going to say the 2020 election was stolen. Joe Biden isn't the rightful president, et cetera. What do you do with that? And that I didn't think that Berliner addressed that in his piece or in the interview, that if conservatism has for a large swath of people, like a majority of Republicans who think that Joe Biden isn't the rightful winner, not just there were some fraud issues, but actually that he didn't win. Do you platform those type of people?
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's what he was talking about. I think he was talking about 2016, Russia,
but it's a
laptop,
it's
COVID,
an extension
immigration.
Of that.
He was.
No, it's not all about January 6th. Go ahead. Have you ever even listened to NPR, by the way?
Yeah, sure.
No, you have not.
Of course I have.
Accidentally.
Oh, stop it, Jesse. Look, here's the thing, that NPR refused to cover Hunter Biden and the Hunter Biden laptop story because they agreed at NPR that it would help Donald Trump. OK. And the problem with this is that this is a taxpayer funded organization. And, you know, I looked up NPR's mission. Just so you know, their words never really match their actions. They say our mission is to celebrate humanity by hearing every voice.
Oh.
No, it's only the liberal voice. So they lie from the get-go. But I think that the amazing part of this is that it shows us that journalism is no longer objective and truthful and honest and all the things that we thought it was. Journalism is activism now. That's all it is on the part of, you know, in the name of diversity. Diversity means only one thing, the color of people, and it has nothing to do with thought. And the amazing thing is this guy still works there. I mean, I give him credit for that. But here's the problem. There are some people who get all of their news from NPR. And for those people, they see a completely different reality. And, you know, that's why discussion of this is so important. People think because it's taxpayer funded, they have to go right down the middle. And it took someone from the inside to say, we are so far left that we won't even talk about something if it's going to help Donald Trump, who was a president of the United States and will be president again.
Yeah, I mean, the people that just watch Fox are probably more informed than the people who just watch NPR, because I interrupt Jessica less these days.
Also, well, we have more Democrats and independents that watch
CNN
than
or NPR combined or MSNBC.
And also, if you are at a liberal place like the New York Times, if you have somebody like Senator Tom Cotton write an op-ed, you get fired.
Yep.
So that's probably why they don't do it.
Yeah, it's called free speech. They don't believe in it.
How awkward is it going to be when this guy walks back into work tomorrow?
I think they all work remote.
Well,
probably.
Ahead, being black could be a tax write-off. Nice. If a radical congresswoman gets her way.
So please, what do you want from me? I've been dancing on the way.
Cracked windshield? Schedule with...
Left-wing lawmakers are trying to keep reparations alive even as the idea fizzles in the blue states. Democratic Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett, which is a great name, she's floating a new way to approach it. She is suggesting that black people should be exempt from paying taxes.
Just this past week, I saw, I don't remember which celebrity, one of the things that they proposed is black folk not have to pay taxes for a certain amount of time. It's like if you do the no tax thing, for people that are already, say, struggling and aren't really paying taxes in the first place, it doesn't really exactly.
So, Judge, there's not like there's this like pot of gold that we have that we're hiding from the reparations folks.
Well, here's the problem. I mean, we're saving all our money for the illegals. Come on. You know, how are we going to have money for reparations? You know, I think the whole thing is really interesting in that she says, you know, the blacks are not really paying taxes in the first place. And I'm like, oh, there are so many people who are freaking out. I mean, how could you talk like that? I mean, you've got Byron Allen, who's like this billionaire, Vernon Jordan, Oprah, Robert Smith, Jay-Z, you know, Damon John, you go on and on. And she's got like this across the board slap. We don't pay taxes anyway. But some people are recommending a write-off. That if you do pay taxes, you should have a write-off. And they don't even care if you're a descendant of a slave. You know, if you're black, you should be able to, you know, get this write-off. Yeah. And it was 170 years ago. Now, as far as I'm concerned, if my family wasn't here 170 years ago and you weren't here 170 years ago, why am I paying you? I mean, the whole thing is a scam. But most black Americans, I found this interesting. 77% want an apology from the government. Mm-hmm. It's not even about the reparations. It's about an apology. And when we had the internment right after World War II with the Japanese, mm-hmm. it was, I think, 40 years later during the Reagan administration that we ended up giving $20,000 to everyone who was in a camp. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, 160, 70 years later, I mean, you know,
Jessica, remember when a certain former presidential candidate on the Republican side said something similar and was excoriated by the Democrats themselves?
But I can imagine it happening. It's interesting where she ends up, because it's where, like, Cory Booker ended up and Elizabeth Warren. They said, basically, we need to have a task force on this. She said a black celebrity said this. She knows very well, and I should say that she has been... You know, she's a freshman congresswoman, a complete breakout star on the Democratic side, does really well in hearings. A lot of people are paying attention to her. And I think she was then trying to be very careful about how she approached this, where she basically said, this needs to be thought through, which sounds like we need a committee on reparations. But I know full well that when any of this gets to a vote, it's never approved because it's too hard to delineate who you're talking about. She says it has to be someone who's descendant of slaves. It can't just be a black American, since there are people who originate from all over the world. And I thought with the tax thing that she was talking about, people who earn too little to qualify for taxes.
That's what I'm talking about. When Romney said that, they were Democrats were like, how dare you? Jesse, are you going to claim your 1%?
Yeah, point one, Dana. I'm with Crockett. If that's what it takes to lower my tax rate, you should see my tax rate.
Oh, you don't know.
Oh, you have no idea.
Tell us,
Jesse.
Only Hunter Biden's not allowed to pay taxes. I mean, right?
Yeah, they let the statute of limitations pass.
But, I mean, that means Diddy has to pay taxes, no taxes, and Oprah has to pay no taxes. So I don't know about that. But I always thought that if there were 750,000 Americans who died in the Civil War to give freedom to African Americans, I mean, that's a lot of death. Now they want 70 years later, they want a check? That's an amazing ask. An amazing ask after all that death. That's the deadliest war in American history. And so if it takes an apology, that's something that I'm sure the United States would do. I don't see why they haven't done it already, offer an apology. But I would ask, do you want a check for a few thousand dollars, or do you want a father who's in your life and married to your mother? Because if you have a father in your life, that check's gone after you cash it. You will, if you have a father, that is the single most determinative factor to financial success in this country. And that's what it should be about.
Well, the government, if she asked for universal school choice, I'd be all over it.
Same here, Dana. I think there's a lot of constructive things you can do to elevate everybody. The fun part is, why do we have to assume that we aren't part of this conversation? Like, if there is a task force, will anybody outside of the African-American community be allowed in that conversation?
We'll let you know.
Yeah, I know. Because, like, if they're going to be, you know, if the task force is going to be there deciding what they're going to do with my money, you know, I would like to be there and just kind of hang out and listen and go, no, I don't think that, you know, because I think it's a little bit arrogant for people to meet and talk about what they're going to do with my money. You cannot punish people who are innocent of sins of the past. And I definitely think that, by and large, everybody's against this. The only people that want this are people who want stuff in general. I think most men would find this beneath them. And if you want more men to leave the Democrat Party, please push this by all means, because no guy is going to say, yeah, I want money for something I didn't get, that I didn't earn. That is like the most insulting thing. And the reparations issue is another example of the compassion lie. You know, the left masks destruction as compassion because they never calculate its effects on everyone else. Shoveling money to one group means you're taking it from another. How do you think that's going to sit with that other group, whether it's whites or Asians or Hispanics or other blacks? Have you thought about that? This is why you were right about the task force. This is the smartest thing that Gavin Newsom ever did. The quote, task force, not where everything goes to die. Yep. Hey, when somebody comes into your office, Jesse, and says, you know what? I really think you should give a segment to Johnny to go, you know, to different routes. You know, we're going to do a task force for that. Mm-hmm. It's dead. That's what Gavin did with reparations.
Mm-hmm. That's what we are going to do next. But just for a few minutes, we're going to go to a break. It's Scrabble for Snowflakes. The beloved word game is getting a woke makeover.
There's a rumor going round about me and you.
We all believe in the mission.
Scrabble is dumbing itself down for the woke. The board game is getting updated to be more inclusive and less competitive. So instead of competing, players collaborate, games are shorter, there are clue cards, and a no more scoring option, so no one's feelings gets hurt. Right now, it's only available in Europe. Okay, so what I think is interesting about this, Jessica, is that they've removed certain words. They banned racist LGBTQ slurs from the tournaments, but there are also new words that are, you know, that the woke generation would be very comfortable with. So is this more about wokeism, this new Scrabble, or is it about ADHD and the fact that they need friends and they need hints and they can't spell?
Well, first, in favor of removing slurs, I think we could probably all agree on that, but maybe not.
So not so fast. Careful, Justin.
All right. We'll get to you. I always thought, though, you could play in teams, or I have played in teams before, even before this thing, but I think they just wanted to create a lighter version that would appeal to younger people. Scrabble can be a tough game.
So is life.
The game is a tough game.
Nicely done.
Okay, Greg, the squares have been cream colored for decades. Ugh. Do you think they're going to make squares of different colors so as not to offend people?
I hope so. I have never played Scrabble in my
You'd
life.
Be so what? Good at it.
Never played it. So I'm not sure how to handle this. This feels like a really solid Fox topic. You know, it happens in Europe. We haven't, you know what I mean? But I've never played it. So I don't know. Maybe this is a gateway drug so you get hooked on the real game. But playing a game without scoring, even if you suck at something, is so anti-human. It's like scoring is part of your DNA. You know, you need to keep track. I'm the world's worst tennis player, but I hate volleying. I would love, that's true. But I love keeping score when I play tennis, even if I lose 6-0, because I need to keep score. For example, I'm keeping score of the five right now.
You're losing in the fashion department.
Yes.
No. Oh. He looks great.
Did you hear that?
You know what, Jesse? I'm surprised that this new Scrabble didn't come with, like, four trophies, so everybody feels like they won.
I know. Come on. I mean, even who was the blonde guy you played tennis against? Stevie Wonder kept score when he played Greg pickleball.
He said the blonde guy.
Stevie
Wonder's blonde. Does he know he's not blonde?
Stop it. I'm not going there.
Anyway, if you take out slurs, Dana's never going to win. So I just think that's, I think it's unfair. I've played Scrabble a few times. I'm more into games of skill like Yahtzee. Those games are really for people that have an intellectual capacity that can really calculate winning and losing. And Scrabble's just for, you know, people that pretend to be intellectual, that actually can't compete in the real world.
Like Yahtzee.
You should name your child Yahtzee.
Don't Every tell time everybody. You
say, Yahtzee!
That's more boys than a girl's name. All right, Dana. Some of the new words are bestie, zomboid, Bitcoin, and sheeple.
Wait.
Bestie?
Zomboy?
Zomboid, Z-O-M-B-O-I-D, and sheeple. Do you know what sheeple is?
Yeah.
What, listeners, people with sheep?
I was just going to say that I think that NPR is playing this new version.
Yeah.
I figured out Uri Berliner, and they are trying
That's
to
hard
score.
To say.
Brian Berliner. Brenberg from Fox Business told me that board games are up 6% in terms of sales.
Oh, good.
And that people want to actually not to get off their phones and to play. So maybe we should just let them
that
play.
That is so Brian.
Well, he is Fox Business.
But, you know, that's nice. That means people are talking yeah. together and there's yeah. a commonality.
It's and, great you when know, you show up at an Airbnb and they have all the games.
Yeah. All right. The Fastest is up next.
You know, I spend a lot of time thinking.
Welcome back. Leather pants, a sheer shirt, and shades. Lenny Kravitz blowing up social media, posting a video of himself pumping iron while in full rock star getup. Life ain't never been better than it is now. Life ain't never been better than it is now. Dana, you have a theory about the pants?
I think that those are faux leather, F-A-U-X. That would be a great word on Loser Scrabble. I have a pair of these, like, fake leather. Well, they're not, like even leather. They're, like, made to look like fake suede pants anyway. I think that they're actually workout pants.
Greg, does that make it any less incredible that he is 59 and ex-president like that?
He is not just 59, Jessica. He is a grandfather. Think about that. When his granddaughter turns 18, he can date her friends, and he will.
That's mean and gross.
It's likely true.
If that
I mean,
is,
I'd want to, but.
If that is leather, I mean, he's sweating bullets under those leather pants. I mean, you know, all he's saying there is, I am so cool. Take my picture as if I don't get enough attention. I mean,
I
the
think
sunglasses.
He deserves that.
You're
Doesn't
good with
Lenny
that?
Kravitz deserve all the cool accolades?
Yeah, he looks great. He deserves everything. He even deserves to pay no income taxes, Jessica.
Why did you have to do that? It's just supposed to be like Lenny Kravitz's hot block. Okay, one more thing is up next. American woman,
get away from me. Here's to getting better with age.
More thing, Jessica, what do you got?
Well, you know what I got. Yeah. Everyone's favorite.
You go, girl.
Every day you say, why isn't this... A 9-year-old girl from India deadlifted 165 pounds. That's cool.
Not Lenny Kravitz.
Three times her body weight.
Lenny Kravitz lifts more.
Arshia Goswami began her powerlifting journey in 2021 when the then 6-year-old set the record for India's youngest deadlifter by picking up 100 pounds. 3 years and a couple of sponsorships later, the pint-sized powerlifter accomplished her personal best. Her father says they both have already set their sights on making it to the Olympics. You go, girl.
I will give you that one.
Yeah.
You know what Greg said in the
Is that because you feel bad that I'm, like, this pregnant and you're like, I have to be nice to her?
No, I said that's impressive. She could, like, imagine if a car is, like, a car's on top of you. It's a good person to have around. Judge?
Okay, I could use that Nexio, too.
Yeah.
Okay, because this is about another you go girl. Anouk Garnier set the new world record for the greatest height climbed by rope. She scaled, listen to this, she scaled the Eiffel Tower all the way up to the second floor.
That's crazy.
A whopping 361 feet above the ground. She trained for a year to achieve this record and is definitely well-deserved for a You Go Girl award. 361 feet.
Seemed like she missed a real opportunity to do some cleaning. All right, Jesse.
I don't know about you, Greg. I don't even think I was going to say this, but enough with the You Go. What is this show turning into?
I don't know.
It's just like everyone's like to girl
you know
stuff.
What deal
that
with
is
my
girl
Jesse,
stuff.
Deal with
what is this show
too,
turning
Greg.
Into?
Yeah, that's life. It's a
you know
bummer.
Who's on Jesse Waters primetime tonight?
Not a girl.
Jake Paul.
Oh, yeah.
You go, boy.
8 o'clock. Yes.
That's a good guess.
Well done. All right, tonight we got a great show. Some dude named Vivek Ramaswamy, Kennedy, comedian Adam Hunter, and Tyrus. Hey, let's do this. Greg's celebrity news. Let's roll it. You know, people have been asking me, Greg, have you seen Brian Stelter lately? And I said, you know what? Down at the Cincinnati Zoo in Ohio, he often goes swimming there and loves to press his manatee-like face up against the glass, saying, do you remember me? I used to do a show on CNN. Why don't you guys watch me anymore? Anyway, there he is. It's called the Stelter exhibit.
You don't have music to go with this?
I wish.
Sexy Stelter.
Yes. Stina.
Okay, so a Labrador retriever named Roger, he was supposed to become a drug-sniffing dog, but he failed because he was overly friendly, playful, and food-oriented. But he had a career change. He found his true calling in life. He's a search and rescue dog. And in the aftermath of Taiwan's earthquake last week, he helped find stranded people under the rubble. And he is a huge celebrity now, being praised as a hero and the pride of Taiwan. So you go, dog.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yes.
That's great. You know, we applaud other people and dogs, but not Brian Stelter.
No.
Stelter.
All right. That's it for us. Have a
great. I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.
Listen to The Five ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.